What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. My name is Adam. I am your host. So on today's episode, this is going to be an audio-only episode. I may or may not record the video for YouTube on this topic. I haven't decided yet, but for this episode that you're listening to right now, it is just going to be audio, and I'm going to be talking about the LaMelo Ball injury. Now, I think it's kind of crazy if you think about it, the comparison from this year's rookies where LaMelo Ball, you know, he did play a lot more of the season than the other player that I'm going to compare him to here, but basically the top player in the sports. So between basketball, it was LaMelo, and I know there's other rookies that are playing well this year, but let's just be honest, LaMelo Ball is the top rookie in basketball this year, and then Joe Burrow in football. Now, Joe Burrow got injured towards the beginning of last year. He obviously tore his ACL and had like kind of a, he had a pretty substantial injury, and I think what I'm seeing in the news is that he is going to be ready for training camp and then the beginning of the season, depending on kind of what the NFL does. I think last year they didn't do preseason, if I'm not mistaken. I don't think they did the preseason. I think they just did training camp right into the beginning of the season because they didn't want teams traveling, all that kind of stuff. But it is sort of strange that the top rookies from each of these sports got hurt and had kind of this season-ending injury. Also, it's weird that they had the season-ending injury literally like a week, or the, like, I think Burrow's was the week of, like the Sunday of the Prism release is when Burrow got hurt, and then last week is when LaMelo got hurt, and now Prism, I think, is coming out very soon, either in the next week or so. I think it's, at least from what I'm seeing, it's still kind of up in the air, and I guess what I'm hoping a little bit is that it makes the product a little bit easier to find. Like, from what I saw, I think if Burrow had played the full season and he had gone on and he won maybe Rookie of the Year, or maybe he was like a top 10 quarterback, like Justin Herbert obviously ended up being that Rookie of the Year, but then also Tua had a fine season. I don't think he had like a great season. I think there's still sort of things that are up in the air for him, whether what team he's going to play on next year, if he's going to get traded, or if he's going to be the starter. I'm hoping that he is the starter, but either way, now we also have seen Carson Wentz get traded, so that means Jalen Hurts is probably going to be the starter, but they brought in Joe Flacco. The Eagles, I'm a little bit nervous for Jalen Hurts because of the Eagles, because it seems like they don't really know what they're doing. Like, I understand that with Nick Foles and the Carson Wentz situation, if I'm Carson Wentz, and I've talked about this on the podcast previously, but like, if I'm Carson Wentz, honestly, I am, you know, to think that it doesn't affect you what happened to him in 2017 when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, I just don't think that's realistic. Like, I think that, you know, players are people, and they have real emotions. Like, sure, they're millionaires and they're playing a sport and they're professional athletes, but they're still people who have feelings and emotions. So, like, if I am Carson Wentz and my team goes on to win the Super Bowl, with granted, Nick Foles, I think, is probably one of the better, he's probably one of the best backups to come in and play for his team. And obviously they beat the Patriots and they won the Super Bowl, which was devastating for me because I'm a Patriots fan. But if I'm Carson Wentz, I look at that, I'm like, well, was I even playing that well? Like, I think he was playing an MVP caliber, but then you look at the team still won the championship without him. So I look at that, at least that's maybe how I would look at it, and maybe as a professional athlete, they're going to look at it differently. But then you kind of see how Wentz played after that. He just didn't play very well. And I don't know. I'm not saying, like, I think last offseason, one of the guys that I was really high on was Baker Mayfield, because he got a new coach, and I think he finally got a coach that was going to be good. Actually, sorry, we'll get back to the Prism and the LaMelo Ball injury in a second, but this is sort of kind of where I'm going with this a little bit. And I'm not saying go out and buy Carson Wentz, but this is the last shot for Carson Wentz. Like, if he, and nobody is really out here saying that Carson Wentz is going to be good either. So I think they're, like, going into last season, Carson Wentz, like, I think that was the season where people were like, this is the last one. But now he's going back to his old, like, the coordinator, or the coach who is the Colts coach was the coordinator when in that 2017 season when he was like an MVP. So I think that has a lot of interesting characteristics for maybe he makes a comeback. Like, I don't know. And at this point, I would say his cards, if Carson Wentz doesn't play well, like, this is got to be the last shot he has. But either way, so that's why I get nervous about the Eagles, that I think they may not know what they're doing. Because, like I said, they brought in Joe Flacco, which, sure, like, I understand bringing in a veteran backup, but, like, Jalen Hurts is, like, old. Like, he played 4 years in college. Like, and now, granted, most quarterbacks are coming into the league at 20, 22, 23 years old because they caught with college football, you have to play, I think, 3 years. Or 21, 22, whatever. It doesn't really matter the age there. But they're coming in a little bit older. But, like, Joe Burrow, for example, he came in at 23 because I think he was a grad transfer to LSU who redshirted as a freshman, so he had an extra year of eligibility. But, like, Jalen Hurts played at Alabama, played at Oklahoma. So I think, I don't know, that's kind of interesting to me. But I look at that and I say, you know, that quarterback class I think is very interesting. But I think the Joe Burrow injury did affect the popularity of that product, but I think it made it a little bit easier for people to get, which I'm hoping that's what happened with Prism. Now, we've seen with Prism that there's going to be 45 different parallels that I've seen, at least. I saw someone put out a chart, I forget exactly who it was, but they put out a chart with 45 of the different parallels. That's up 5 from last year. And I think that the main reason they're doing that there is because they want to be able to make as many boxes as possible without changing the structure of the product, if that makes sense. Like, without having to change the odds or change how the boxes are put together, they want to be able to create as much of this product. And it's, I think the thing within cards that maybe people don't, maybe they underestimate it, maybe they're just purposely not thinking about it, is that, like, everybody for the most part is trying to make money when it comes to cards. We're trying to make money when we're buying and selling cards. The card companies are trying to make money. All the card companies are trying to make money. PSA is trying to make money. SGC, all these people, BGS, all of these people are trying to make money. So, you know, when I see people talking about how many parallels there are and how it's becoming the junk wax era 2.0, and it's like, I understand that take, because I can understand how you could look at the junk wax era and say, I could understand how you could look at this era and say, well, this is the new junk wax era. And I guess I understand the take, but at the same time, it's like, what do people expect is going to happen? Like, the demand for cards, maybe with the internet and with how many, with like the United States population and how popular it is overseas and how easy it is to buy them online. Like, I don't understand what people expect these companies to try and do when it comes to making money. Like, they want to make money selling cards the same way, like I said, that we all want to make money by buying and selling cards. So I think that's also kind of another tip. And I've watched a lot of Sasha's videos. He makes, obviously, one of probably the best content creators, I think, in sports cards. So in his videos, he always talks about that whenever he's making deals. And I know Jameel from Shop Mealy Pops also talks about this. They talk about, like, if you're doing a deal with somebody, you don't want necessarily, you want to make sure you're doing the deal and that both of you can make money there. Like, you don't want your cards, you don't want to make a deal with somebody and then have them, like, look at the deal and be like, oh, I lost money on this card because I gave this person a better deal. And it's also kind of the mentality that I've had when I've been selling cards and then they've gone up more significantly. Like, I was selling some Mbappes. Like, I think I sold one even like three, four weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, for like $900, and now they're like $1,200, $1,300. So, like, you know, that's unfortunate that I missed out on $400 or $500 worth of profit there. But at the same time, like, I look at it and I say, well, you know, although I lost out on that profit, somebody, if they want to sell that card, they're not going to miss out on it. So it's like, they're going to look at the deal that they made. And, you know, you don't want someone to get your card and then it immediately to lose 10, 20, 30, maybe 50% of the value. Because I think that's a realistic number nowadays. Like, I think the increases and decreases of cards is very volatile. And I don't really think that's even, a hot take to say necessarily, but I think if you're making a deal with somebody, you obviously want to make money, but you want to make sure that you are trying your best to help that other person make money as well. And I don't think it's necessarily, it's not a one-way street, I guess, if that's, it's not a win-lose situation. You should try and create a win-win for both of you. Like, if either you're making the deal with cash, or you're making a deal at a show, or you're making the deal online, like, you should be okay with maybe taking a little bit less, because, look, the opportunities within sports cards are endless right now, and I think we're still seeing more and more opportunities pop up, whether that's a sport, whether that's a player, there's always opportunities to make another deal, like, and you shouldn't, you should look back and try and learn if something bad happened, but if something good happened, you should also try and figure out how things could have been better. And if, like I said, if things didn't go your way, I think you should be trying to look at that and say, well, how could this have gone better? If it went bad, obviously. But I just think that, like, with the LaMelo injury, I'm hoping that Prism is a little bit easier to find. I'm not holding my breath, because every single day I keep seeing pictures of people, like, in line at Targets and all that stuff. And I know they implemented the like, waiting policy, where they text you so that way you don't have to wait in line. And some people are saying they were waiting 2 or 3 hours. And I mean, it's really, the retail releases are becoming very similar to what happens with shoes, because, you know, the resale value on these boxes is through the roof. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm thinking quite a bit about if that's a good thing, or how, if it should change. And I don't necessarily know. And I think if I'm Panini, here's what I would do if I'm Panini. And obviously this is from a company trying to make money perspective. This isn't from a collector trying to make money perspective. If I'm Panini, I'm taking out everything from retail, and I'm exclusively selling boxes on either my website, or I link up with, you know, Target, and I link up with one of these, some company, you know, I link up with StockX, and I sell the box exclusively through either myself, or I sell it through either a distributor or something along those lines. But I want to keep the pricing where it is. Like, I guess I don't necessarily want to raise the price as much. Because if you look at, like, shoes, like, yeah, shoes have kind of gone up. Like, if you look at, like, the prices of certain Jordans from, like, 10 years ago to now, the pricing is pretty significantly, or significant that it's gone up. Now, it's, you know, some of them, it kind of depends on which one you're looking at, but, like, how the popularity of it. But, like, if I'm Panini, why would you look at the amount of profit you can make from selling something through retail? And this is, you know, I guess maybe this is an opinion, maybe it's not, maybe it's, like, a fact, but, like, why would you, if you're Panini, why would you, the amount of more money you probably could make, because if Target is getting these boxes, that means Panini is selling to a distributor, and then a distributor is selling to Target. But if I'm Panini, I'm looking at it and saying, we literally could just sell as many boxes as we would in retail online, and then just sell them in waves, almost similar to how they do it in retail, where the distributor is going to the store and dropping off the boxes. If I'm Panini, I'm looking at it and saying, why don't we just sell the boxes ourselves and make all of the money? Like, it, and I get, you know, I get that there are companies, the distribution companies that are doing these sports cards. And, you know, that's, if Panini decides to just sell exclusively through them, they're going to lose some of their revenue, because they're not gonna have the people to sell to Targets and Walmarts and all of the retail stores that they sell to. But it's like, I don't know. I just look at it. I look at it from both sides. Like, and I don't know if that would make things easier, or if it would make it more accessible. Because I understand that a lot of bots probably would get in, but there's got to be a way that they can figure out a way to, that they can figure out a way to get these boxes to make more money, and then also get the boxes to people. Because, like, And maybe they just look at it and they say, we're just not going to change anything because the amount of technology or the amount of money we'd have to spend on our end isn't going to be worth it in the short term, where we're looking at the window of how sports cards are going to continue to be popular. So I guess, I don't know, that's kind of, I guess I look at it that way and I say, where can improvements be made? Because, you know, if they're printing as much Prism as I think they're going to print this year, what's going to happen in like 3 or 4 years? What's the print run going to look like in 3 or 4 years? Like, at what point does Panini say we're not printing anymore? Because, and it's going to probably have to be something where, I don't know, actually, I see, this is the thing. It's like, where does it end? Like, where does the print runs of these products end? Because if you're Panini, and like I said, you're trying to make money, you look at it and say, if people just want Prism, we're just going to keep printing it. And I guess because then they look at it and say, well, what happens to the secondary market value if this print run just keeps going up and up and up and it's doubling and tripling and quadrupling every single year? But at the same time, if you're Panini, it's like, I don't know, you know, we can take the hit. We can say, I don't know, maybe they're looking at it this way, maybe they're not looking at it this way, but I think that they would be saying in 10 years or 5 years or however their scope is, if we project that card values are going to drop at some point, like, what is the demand for these cards going to be? Like, what is the, like, are we going to go back to the 2013-2014 demand, or are we going to go back to the 2016-2018 demand? Like, which, because 2016-2018, I feel like it was one of the best, in my opinion, it was probably one of the best times for getting boxes of cards, because you could still get them, but the cards still had a little bit of value. But, like, at what point do people look at the populations and say these cards are, Prism is almost worthless because of how many there are? I don't know. And I think it's something that I hope that Panini is looking at and saying, well, we're monitoring it and we're going to keep an eye on it. And, you know, we'll never know we know that the print run went up. We'll never know the exact print run. And if we ever find out the exact print run, I think that could be one way that we could potentially see some sort of market decrease in modern cards. I think older cards are probably safe, like, you know, the 90s and 2000s and obviously 80s and vintage stuff. Those are probably safe from this type of information coming out. But, like, modern stuff, if we ever find out the exact print run, like, if we ever found out that there are a million Lucas and then there are 1.5 million LaMelo Balls, that would probably be an issue. And I think it would actually just be an issue for, it would probably be a trickle-down issue where, you know, if there are 700,000 cards for 700,000 Jason Tatums, I guess you kind of look at it that way. And I don't know. I look at it from a bunch of different angles, and I try and analyze, like, what I think is going to happen. And that's where I see, you know, Prism coming out, and I'm hoping that there's going to be, I don't know if it's regulations or if Panini says, like, we look at it and say, we're going to make the cards, like, at what point is the money that Panini's making, when do they look at it and say, if we hit this number, we can stop the increases in print runs, I guess. I don't know if that's a thing or if that's what they're thinking about, but that's kind of something that I'm hoping that they're thinking about, and hopefully it's something that they've got on their radar. I don't know. We'll see, though. But that's all I've got for today's episode. So I want to thank you all for listening. Make sure you go follow on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, all those good places. Thank you all for listening, and I'll see you in the next one.